to Clay and Iron. I'm Dr. Bill Deagle, MD, and our special guest tonight is Mark Hazelwood from the book, of course, his first book, which is Planet X, and second one is Delicate Earth. And the second book, I believe, is really quite an accomplishment because it's really a compilation of science, technology, and many questions from many different authors. And in a sense, Mark has stepped back, in a sense, more as an editor to compile all of this evidence, so it's not just, quote, his opinion. Welcome to the program this evening, Mark.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on, Mark, because it does stir up controversy, and I love controversy because it makes people think about things, whether they agree or disagree. At least the issues are dealt with. And when the scientific, one of my scientific mentors many years ago said, the real issue is to discover the paradoxes and then find the question that you should ask in response to the paradox, because that's the real pearl. That's the answer to look for. Why, for example, is not only the Earth heating up, but all of the planets of the solar system? Why are we having geotectonic events happening that appear to be totally independent of man's influence on the Earth? And, of course, albeit where our pollution is affecting things, but the global warming through, quote, greenhouse gases doesn't make sense, especially when the gases are high enough that where they actually are located is around minus 50 to 60 degrees. And you'd assume if greenhouse gases were truly working the way they anticipated that Dr. Carl Sagan thought, that the Earth would have be considerably different temperatures on planets like Venus that have different concentrations on the dark and light side and many other anomalies that just don't make sense with the, quote, greenhouse gas theory. So with that intro, can you tell us a little bit about your latest book, Delicate Earth?
Well, actually, you've done a pretty good introduction to it. The first book, as you said a couple different times, I kind of like it in retrospect. It's kind of baby steps into the subject.
Right.
You know, really not knowing where I was at, but knowing I got a hold of something. And then after studying the subject, and studying many different people who are a lot better researchers than myself, I just simply pulled together all their material and offered that up and took myself out of the way.
That's a really what I call intellectually and spiritually wise position. And what it does is it makes it so that they can't make an ad hominem attack against Mark Hazelwood.
Well, that was
who do
also.
You think you are Mark Hazelwood when it's just like I call it the Martin Sheen effect, you know? All you have to do is be a logical, regular guy that asks some really good questions, being spiritually centered, and all of a sudden everybody is up in arms saying, who do you think you are asking those good questions?
Well, I'm just curious about your audience. Are they at all, have they been exposed at all to the Planet X situation?
Well, I had John DiNardo speaking about it on the program earlier.
Oh, okay. All right. Probably gave a good introduction.
Yeah, we did. We talked about it to some extent. And we talked also about McCanny's research, talking about the solar system as a Tesla wheel with a plasma field outside and the sun being generating solar wind, net negative, and, of course, the planets acting as solar capacitors, jumping the charge. That's why alignments can cause changes in weather and geotectonics, especially with gravitational waves.
But, well, you seem to have a better grasp of this than I have, and I've been in and around the subject for 5 or 6 years.
But anyway, the thing that I got a hold of your book several years ago, and I went through it, and at first I was real skeptical, but I'm the kind of person that when I see something that kind of really sticks out, I consider it like a paradox. I want to find out if there's any real truth to it. And the more I tried to knock it down, the more I said, oh, my God, you know, I think this guy's got something, which is why you're on the program tonight and why I had John DiNardo on. And the reason is that there's a whole lot of what I call interesting anomalies that you can connect the dots. So the first one being, of course, global warming, geotectonic events, and lots of strange solar activity like solar max ejection phenomena that just don't add up. And then you have the strange behavior of our above-government globalists building underground bases like beavers. For decades, in a frenzy, obviously knowing something that they don't want us to know.
And a group of the first scientists actually built a little community up in Lakemont, Georgia, of dome homes, which is supposedly the strongest structure known to man.
Right.
And you could talk to the carpenters up there, and they all know why, because
right.
The scientists discussed Planet X with them.
Right.
So as far, you know, as 35 years ago, we knew this planet was approaching. The general public isn't aware, though.
Well, it's one of the things I find particularly disturbing, that they consider us like these stupid high-level Illuminati Brotherhood Masons, that they all figure everything should be hidden. And I believe very strongly in the power of what I call the human consciousness as a corporate being, that if we just didn't become enlightened, even some of us, then the whole body becomes enlightened in truth, and there should be no such thing as classified.
That's kind of like the 100th monkey situation.
Yeah, and I think that
syndrome or whatever they call it.
Precisely. I think that if we give enough information to the public, as stupid and slothful as they have been, because we've basically fed them mental ice cream, if we put them on a fit mental diet, a spiritual diet, they'll actually fit up, and all of a sudden they'll actually make logical choices and start taking decisions in their own hands. And
yeah, well, it isn't that complicated.
Yeah, I mean, think it's really pretty simple. But what they've done is they've, you know, fed people mental pablum, so it's no wonder they're still staying babies.
Right, right. Well, it wouldn't take long for, you know, anyone to get up to speed, though.
No. I figured it would take a matter of 8 crisis weeks and so on. But we have to make sure that people prepare, because the primary preparation, I find, whether it's dealing with something as obvious as the avian flu, which is, you know, precisely, and by the way, this is in my opinion, it is a weaponized virus, right, by DNA letter by DNA letter. This is a laboratory virus. Just
right.
As we know that the solar and scientists are quite well aware, including the laboratory for Rome, which has one of the largest telescopes in South America. We're quite well aware that they are aware, as well as many other above government agencies, that there's something definitely going to happen to the planet, and has happened before. In fact, the mountain building activity could only happen with a very hypergravitational object moving through our solar system that would cause mountain building.
You know, the other day, John DiNardo asked me a great question, and I didn't know the answer to it, so I went and asked McKinney about it.
Uh-huh.
He was discussing a couple sightings from telescopes in the northern hemisphere.
Right.
And apparently there's no way possible to, you know, aim these huge telescopes, even if they're 10 foot across in diameter, and find Planet X. So I asked McKinney about it. He says, well, there's actually an array, not just one Hubble's up there, but many different Hubble's up there. They're
right.
Not called Hubble's. And they're all interconnected, and it's these large land-based scopes where they're connected up to. In other words, they have access. They're allowed blocks of time to look at the satellite-based scopes, look through them, and look around. And that's how they've sighted this Planet X, not with the land-based scopes.
I'm certain that would be much more accurate, because you've got to detect something relatively small but changing a position across the solar elliptical, or below it, which is apparently what it's coming toward the planet from below the ecliptical, which is why, what was the name of that scientist that you referenced in your book that came back and he had an untoward end after he discovered that there was pretty significant evidence that there was a very large object approaching, either a large planet or a...
You mean Harrington?
Dr. Harrington. Well, what happened to Dr. Harrington? What's the story on his...
Well, he was given... There's long since been a kind of a large menu of ways to take people out that many of
take
our...
Take people out, is that the new word for kill?
Yes. I don't know, it's an old word. Actually, it's a very old phrase.
Prevent heartbeats from occurring, prevent consciousness from still inhabiting a fleshly body.
Oh, right. Anyway, what they did to them is they gave him cancer. This kind of cancer that you're suddenly healthy, and all of a sudden, within 2 weeks, you're dead of cancer, which is a very rare cancer.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dr. Harrington, he was with the Navy, and he has, if you just research online, you can find many of his papers that he discusses Planet X. I mean, you know, he was right on top of the situation. He wasn't about to give it up. I mean, that was his gig, you know, learning all about this planet coming in and then reporting it back, but apparently he wouldn't shut up, so, you know.
Yeah, well, you know that they can use scalar technologies to turn on stroke, heart attack, cancer, do anything to you. They have all of this worked out, and because I worked as a doctor taking care of people with directed energy weapons, and I have advanced knowledge in quantum mechanics and scalar biophotonics. I know exactly. In fact, I lectured this weekend on that very subject down in Laguna Beach, California. And, in fact, my DVDs will be available here in the next few weeks talking about this.
You know, I'd like to back up a little bit and give people just my understanding of how the average solar system is built.
That's
basically
a great idea. Just for those who haven't heard the program before, let's start from the primary Lego building blocks of the solar system.
Well, the average solar system is binary, about 74%.
Meaning that it has two stars.
That's correct. This is how they begin. They start spinning around each other, and then they attract planets, as in
almost
comets.
Almost like a yin-yang thing. They're spinning around. They have two solar masses. One may be bigger than the other.
Right. And actually, there's about 14% on top of that 74% that actually have three suns.
Right.
And I'm not aware of the lesser percentage. But so the vast majority are either two or three suns. And also what has been discovered in the 90s with, you know, this array of satellite-based telescopes, huge scopes, is that the average binary or, triple-based solar system has one that's known as a dwarf that orbits back and forth or around the three suns. And so,
system is technically a trinary system because Jupiter gives off more radiation than it receives, so it's at least a binary, and then if we have this dwarf star in a very hyper-elliptical orbit that is below the solar ecliptic, which means it's below the plane of all of the planetary rotations, then that would explain a lot of the strange events down through history.
Well, our second sun, from what I understand, I mean, this is excluding Saturn, would be a dark star.
Uh-huh. Right.
That is no threat to us. It just sits out there a few billion miles. But it explains all the anomalies in the orbits of the planets that are orbiting around our sun perfectly.
Ah, so this is a 50 billion miles old or something really enormous, right?
Well, I don't know exactly how many billion miles, but it's between, say, 5 and 50.
Yeah.
I can't be sure myself. But it's our dwarf that is what we're discussing here.
Right.
Planet X or Nibiru or the Destroyer. There's a long list from ancient historical sources. I put this list in my first book. Actually, in the second book, I think I have it too.
Yeah, and of course, that's the flying disc that you see in ancient Sumer and Babylon and Egypt. That's a representation of Marduk and the Phoenix and et cetera.
All right, so you have a dwarf that's orbiting back and forth. And it takes approximately, let's say, 3,650 years, give or take a few years, maybe a decade or less, depending on the influence that it runs into. That would be our dwarf in this solar system on its regular orbit. And every other solar system, for the most part, the average one, has this same thing happening. And when the dwarf comes through, that's when the problems happen.
Uh-huh.
Because the dwarf is simply a name for a planetoid object as a cross between a sun and a planet. That's not quite a sun, although it has some slow smoldering fusion going on, but not as small as a planet, but it's a lot more dense than a planet also. So it has also objects that orbit it or accompany it when it comes in. So when it comes through, it doesn't have to hit any of the planets when it comes through the immediate solar system, but it generally disrupts the surfaces of the planets it passes when it comes into the immediate solar system. So consequently, you might say God built the entire universe with a reset button that happens
so
every 3,000 years, perhaps.
So every 3,600 plus years, the reset
in our solar system, not all solar systems.
Yeah,
that
our
was,
solar
that
system,
was a, that
the
was
reset
there.
Button pushes and says reset planetary history.
Exactly, by simply disrupting the surface of the planets it passes. So Earth is not being singled out. This solar system is not special. I mean, the majority of solar systems, this kind of thing is happening on a regular basis.
So in other words, it's one of the primary factors that makes the planetary geography, the continental drifts, the mountainous effects, as well as probably mega tsunamis where the crust gets locked in space by gravitational waves, and then the oceans pile up and explain some of the ancient legends of floods that probably are not only due to rain, but also due to mega tsunamis that spread over continents.
Yes. The electrogravitational wave as these huge objects pass, and it will only look like a huge comet in the sky. It won't look any, you know, it won't look like a huge planet passing by.
Right,
but
it's not,
it could,
it's so great, the distance is so great, it's not going to cover, to subtend an arc that's very wide, but it's going to look like another comet, which is why all of the ancient, quote, astrologers, going back to the ancient numerology astrologers from the Chaldees in ancient Sumer and Babylon, we're very aware that these things occulted and they cause great historical events.
And many prophets from ancient sources simply felt that these objects accompanied great changes, but they weren't the result of great changes. They didn't get the connection. They only saw that when this object passes, they could foresee changes. So there wasn't the science behind the why that these objects happen to be passing when these great changes in the surface were happening at the time.
And, of course, I think it not only has geotectonic effects. I'm very aware that scalar sacred geometry, phi, pi, and other symbols that are the, if you want to call it, the scalar geotectonics, not only of the world, but also geometrics of biological systems, could affect consciousness and living things as well.
Well, that is true. If there's some sort of plan going on for who's going to survive and who's not, you would simply, let's just imagine there is a plan like that. I'm not saying there is. Let's say that the universal mind has a plan like that. It would very quickly start raising consciousness of certain people on the planet that it would want to survive so that they could get through this a lot more easily.
Yeah,
and this would all happen naturally. There would be no exact cause and effect. It would just happen.
Right, so it's
simultaneously.
Similar in a sense to the warning, so that there were no elephants, dogs, cats, and other animals that were caught by the tsunami in Indonesia almost about a year and a half ago now. Because they kind of intuitively knew something was happening that was a change shaper of history in their local area. And you'd assume that a percentage of at least of humans are going to become attuned to that level of consciousness to be aware that something's going to happen and that maybe it might be worthwhile to spiritually become aware and then physically prepare.
That's true. At the same time, the understanding that this is all an illusion, this form, It's how did you describe it? Some sort of specific kind of holographic projection.
It's basically a polydimensional fractal holographic image, and the way I think of it is a series of.
So you and I aren't really real, although it looks like that.
Well, I know that
we're not real specific individuals. We're just part of this projection.
Yeah, what's really going on, if you want to be talking in terms of either quantum physics or advanced, what I call quantum...
And there's just one being doing the projecting. And we're simply like peepholes into the projection. That's all.
Well, we're individual points of consciousness that understand it. That's, in other words, we're moving as spirits through this montage of reality points that follow specific rules. And what we're really doing is we're trying to become aware because, you know, whether we physically, in our physical projection, in our spiritual growth, this is a challenge that makes us respond by becoming aware of our world and the nature of what it is. And
but all of our consciousness is stemming from the same being.
Right.
So there really isn't there's no duality here. It only appears to be duality.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the physical thing, though, because most people are not going to grasp that. They get so often to existentialism that's going to say, I'm sorry, you lost me.
Okay.
They may not be at the point where they can understand that. The real
well, how about a holodeck? Maybe you could explain it in terms of a holodeck.
It's like the holodeck. Yeah, exactly. But the thing I find most similar between the Planet X issue and the coming, I call biological 9/11, nuclear 9/11, financial 9/11, incidents are in our near future, which are, by the way, being manipulated by what I call the dark hand of the globalist maniac death cults.
But these cults are all part of the one being doing the projecting. So
well,
if it's allowed and if it's happening, then it's part of the perfection of what will come to pass.
Well, it'll certainly make people kind of desire to become in tune with the one true God, and as a result, they'll survive.
So it could be the so-called dark side of the one could provide the spark needed for the quick development or raising the consciousness of others.
Well, we're basically at the moment of increasing spiritual contractions of the Earth as a spiritual and planetary uterus about to deliver embryonic and fetal humanity into a higher understanding of who and what they are.
Well, that's exciting.
and the thing is that I find, and that's why this is not a peripheral issue, because to give you a concrete example, four years ago, I'm intuitive, I started having these dreams and visions about seeing a lot of bodies piled up and seeing choking smoke and waking up choking, and I said, what's going on here? This is crazy. And then I kept on getting journals. All of a sudden, they kept on talking about the avian flu. I said, that's ridiculous, too. So I'm being a skeptic. When things keep on shoving in my face, whether it's Planet X, I started investigating. I said, oh, my God, there's something here. So I started pulling up the actual literature, reviewed all the literature, spent hundreds of hours, and realized, oh, by the way, I got the documents on March 16, 1997, from the WHO. They wanted to make a pandemic flu. And then I started looking at the DNA sequences and realizing this was fully and completely weaponized. And the analogy is, you get this dual message coming out in the news. Oh, it's going to kill everybody. Oh, it's nothing. And then what happens is people just go to sleep and say, look, it's just entertainment. The same way as Planet X. Planet X sounds like a B-movie.
Yeah, it does.
So people don't take it seriously. And as a result, I don't see hardly anybody getting the first line of defense kits that I put together to give them 99% of their protection. They don't realize, for example, when they're drinking their water in America, the EPA allows 97 known carcinogens in their water, but they don't filter it. People are in a state of what I call unconsciousness. They've got a conscious level. So it's really not an information war. I've got tons of information. I've got scientists on like Dr. Henry L. Nyman, and you have a ton of scientists in your book, Delicate Earth. But do people respond, even in a scientific or a questioning way? I call the Martin Sheen question style. No.
Well, you know...
That's why I see the similarity between the issues, because I really believe you're onto something, Mark. I think you've got one of the key issues that's driving this manic desire toward a matrix of control over the population, these building of underground bases, and their crazy desire to completely control everybody on the planet.
You said at one point in a conversation we had, I think it was privately, that you had been in one of the bases before.
Yeah, I've been underground at Falcon Air Force Base in the underground city, yeah.
How large is that?
Really big. Really big. Let's put it this way. When we went in the elevator, we dropped down so deep into the ground, you literally are airborne as you're in the elevator. You go to zero G.
Okay.
When we stopped, it was like getting off on the holodeck of the Star Trek.
Okay.
Mock-up simulation for training of NORAD in this underground city in Falcon. It was everything completely reproduced. That's how big it was.
And these underground cities are connected by high-speed rail.
Everything in all of these cities, 132 cities that are 5.36 to 7.24 cubic miles, 1.5 to 4 miles down, connected by high-speed maglev trains that are unidirectional, traveling Mach 2 in vacuum tube tunnels with fiber optic cables in the ceiling. So even if the satellites go out, they have plenty of communication capacity. And they spend trillions on these. Trillions with a T.
Right, yeah.
It's ridiculous. And they've taken an approach to the rest of us as if, well, you don't really know because you're not going to live anyway.
Well, I already know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Well, how do you think these underground cities will hold up while the mantle of the Earth is going through a huge wave?
Very good question. Firstly, the kinds of waves of scalar and tectonic waves are going to completely smash all their tunnels, so they'll be very fancy graves. And even if they could maintain nuclear power and hydroponics, they're going to be like the Morlocks, 80,000 years ahead of H.G. Wells' cataclysm that happened on the Earth when they messed around with the moon, you know, in the early 21st century. And then what happened is, of course, they... Ended up going underground with the cataclysm of the destruction of the Earth. And it's a very similar thing. I mean, I see the dialectic of what's going on is these beings are going to get themselves locked underground.
You know, all this is doom and gloom, but...
Not really. It's just a cycle of reality. Reality is, is just what it is. I mean, you know.
Well, it's a projection. It's an illusion.
Yeah, and always, you just think of it this way.
And our consciousness never ends. It doesn't matter whether these bodies come and go.
Right. Well,
I mean,
for example,
there is no true death.
Right. My exactly. We're eternal beings. We're spirit beings having a human existence. We had a nuclear war proven. This is not conjecture. This is not open. Krypton nuclei in the obsidian glass, 12,600 square miles in Ashurbanipal, India, 12,500 to 12,900 years ago. We had a nuclear war.
Right.
There probably were scalar weapons and other things. There are ancient temples with what looks like black op helicopters around that time. Now, whether they opened
up... Yeah, I've seen those drawings on the side of the
right, whether
the
they
wall.
Opened up a Stargate and they actually were able to go through time travel and put our technologies into the past, that may well have happened. But most likely what happened is that civilization reached the same level of technology as us, and they didn't pass the test. So they
well, maybe it wasn't a test per se. Maybe just the whole society reaching the peak as it did gave birth to a few that went on in consciousness to different realms.
Right.
And it needed all that to go on for those people to awaken, those handful or those few thousand or whatever it took.
Right. And it burst all of the civilizations that eventually resulted in civilizations in China, Asia, and North Europe and elsewhere in Australia that eventually became, to quote, the ancient civilizations that crawled up from the muck again, developed the Bronze Age through the Steel Age, and eventually technological ages and the ages of enlightenment that now have resulted in the same question being asked, will you be spiritual microbes or will you be spiritual giants? And if we don't respond to this properly, we'll go through the same process of reset the button for whether or not most of humanity is not going to make it to the next phase. And I believe we're at that same point. And I think, in a sense, we're at the launch point whether we're not going to be considered a cosmic civilization. Because it's primarily based on the spiritual understanding of the knowledge of who and what we are first, so that we don't have this dissonance and do things, as I often say, if we knew what we were, we certainly wouldn't do what we do. And that's one of the biggest problems, you know, wrecking our planet, destroying our cage, in a sense, like animals on the edge of the theme park, is not a very rational thing for us to do as a, quote, advanced being.
Well, it seems that this dwarf may help us along with that.
Yeah, and I think that's the process that is meant. Just like it talks about that star in the Book of Revelation is referred to as Wormwood, which is a well-known dark root poison in Europe and in these other areas.
You know, have you introduced to your audience at all any of Dr. Hawkins' work and what he uncovered in the 80s and then published in the 90s about the level of consciousness?
We had talked about that on the program before, but that is a very key issue. And I think, in fact, what I see is it's not a peripheral issue. And we talked about this off air before, but no, we haven't dealt with that. Because what I see, whether people are making in terms of energy usage, honesty, having a backbone spiritually, intellectually, and otherwise, and questioning, quote, authority, is all based on consciousness. In fact, the primary yardstick by which a civilization can be measured is not Nishui Kako's levels of utilization of energy, whether we have zero-point energy or we're able to fold space-time and jump across the galaxy with beam ships. It really deals with the issue of what kinds of level of consciousness we have, so that we can rationally start preparing for things as a corporate being, because although we have separate points of identity and consciousness, we haven't been doing that. And what I see, in fact, is the wackos in control have a counter, which is to maximize chaos, destruction, and the dialectic of control. And it's not a peripheral issue. What you're touching on is, I think, the central issue of our age.
Well, Dr. Hawkins in the 80s uncovered a scale of consciousness and arbitrarily put zero as the bottom and 1,000 at the top. 1,000 would be the top that anyone can achieve consciousness-wise in this realm.
Right.
And there's significant points all along the way. But his name is Dr. David R. Hawkins.
Yeah, so they
and
can
if anyone wants to, you know, type in his name on the internet, they'll find he has several books. And the best one would be I, simply I, subjectivity and relativity.
Right. And it's not a peripheral issue, because if you get into the really advanced physicists that talk about theoretical physics, you know, they try to go beyond string theory to a true general and special theory of relativity. The level of consciousness and the fact that consciousness and reality are, in a sense, controlled and intimately tied with the very fabric of the universe is not a peripheral issue.
Well, this scale, the way you find out where one predominantly is on the scale is by using kinesiology, which is a very simple test that was first
used. Again, kinesiology is based on the idea that the universe itself cannot lie. It's like a lie detector.
Exactly.
Reality.
And it also shows that there is a universal mind that we're all connected to.
Of course.
There isn't two minds, there isn't three, there's only one.
Which is why any advanced culture doesn't have religion, they just have relationship with the I Am.
Exactly. And, well,
it's not possible. In fact, if you had billions of civilizations and billions of individuals within each civilization thinking that they had their own idea of right and wrong, you'd have what's called chaos and total annihilation.
Yeah, if one uses kinesiology, one can also find out where the planet is in relation to this scale. And it turns out we are just over the level of integrity, but there are only about 15% of the people on the planet holding us up, so to speak. Because
you're
the scale,
about most of the people on the planet are in a sense of what are almost zombification.
What was that again?
They're almost zombified. They're actually barely consciously and not able to feed their physical desires.
Well, you know, each point on the scale is 10 times greater than the point before it.
Right, so it's a logarithm.
It's a logarithm thing, yeah. And so that the lower end of the scale is the amount of energy one has, or if you could just label it as level of consciousness, is so low it is almost like being underwater or in a sludge,
right,
where it just you're barely functioning.
Right, which is not good. And in fact, this is actual geopolitical, scientific, technical, and intellectual danger minefield, because it's one of the things that feeds the use of religion as a basis for annihilation of each of us fighting wars, or the basis of dogma over a relationship, which is what even great teachers like Messiah Yeshua HaMashiach said, you know, your dogmas and your traditions nullify the gospel or the relationship with the I Am. And that's what he tried to teach, and of course other great teachers taught that too, but I believe the clearest message came from Moses and was completed in Yeshua. And that's important, because people don't understand the real gospel is not being teached typically in the regular churches. They teach a gospel they call of Pablum. And so we say we'll have spiritual babies out there.
Well, if any religion does have the seeds of what you can use in order to raise consciousness, but the, you know, like you just said, the dogma associated with most religions.
Right, but the seeds are still there. You're right.
Yeah, the seeds are there.
So how would you tie that with?
One doesn't need a religion or even so-called spirituality to find out what works, what raises consciousness, and what helps. I mean, serving your fellow man, that'll help you raise consciousness. It's just a known fact. You can use it and test it and find out with kinesiology that it works.
Now,
and it makes you feel good, too.
Yeah, well, in fact, we're wired in such a way as a being that we can't actually even feel, we aren't even capable of feeling happy, not by acquiring things for ourselves, but doing for others. We're actually not, you know, people might lie and say otherwise, but it's not possible to be happy unless you serve others.
Well, that
whether
is a major
it's other people
part of it.
Or other creatures. In fact, so the annihilation of species on the planet and the pollution of the earth and the destruction of the beauty of nature and other beings is not is anathema to the very state and how we're wired to actually to feel good about ourselves.
Well, at the same time, it allows everything, this one.
Yeah, every
being.
Possibility is still allowed, of course.
Right. So anything and anybody and any way of thinking is allowed. That doesn't mean it's going to get you anywhere, although you may kid yourself that it is.
Get you to a short or long dead end.
Right.
So how would you tie that to the scientific crises now, going back full circle? Because how would you tie that to how people are receiving your first book and the second one, of course, with much more science, Delicate Earth, which they can Google and find the book? How are they?
Well,
what's your website, by the way?
It's planetxinbound.com.
Planetxinbound.com.
Yeah.
So how did you manage to jump from the issue of Planet X, which is pretty cataclysmic, to the issue of consciousness? How did you make that transformation to realize that was a key connection between those two?
You know, at this time, I can't tell you. It just naturally came about.
Isn't that amazing how that happens, right?
Well, okay, back when I was a teenager, my mother was interested in spirituality, so she went and found some people that were teaching Kundalini Yoga, which is a way to raise consciousness. It's a slow boat to China, though. It can take decades. There are a lot quicker ways to do this. But I was exposed to some spiritual information back then, and there was one guy who brought himself over 600 on the scale that taught this Kundalini Yoga. 600 is a point on the scale that whereby everything, your view of reality suddenly changes once you go 600 or over. It's called the enlightened state, but actually once you go over 600, that's like grade school enlightenment at that point.
Right.
And some states aren't as strong as others, and a lot of times only a small percentage of your beingness is even attuned to that state when you cross over. But anyway, this guy was enlightened. I don't know how deeply enlightened he was, but he basically said that my job later on would be as a surgeon. And I thought to myself, that doesn't make any sense at all. But this was after everything I thought for 10 minutes straight he said. So I thought it was interesting, but I never went to medical school to become a surgeon. But apparently there was another teacher some 35 years later that suddenly told me, you know, you're the surgeon. I never discussed, you know, what the first one said to me at all. And basically what they were saying is you have to open people up to the reality of the subject you're talking about, and the only way you're going to sew them up is basically offering them the spiritual message that goes along with that.
Yeah,
so
in other words,
the surgeon opens people up with some amount of fear, but you have to close it, sew it up, get rid of the fear by offering the spiritual message at the same time.
Yeah, I agree with that, which is why my show is called Clay and Iron. I believe you shouldn't never open up a patient, literally spiritually, or an issue that's pretty horrendous, unless you provide a solution, which always has to start with a spiritual solution before you deal with the technical and the logistic parts of that solution.
So if one has just total faith that they are being guided by the hand of this universe, whatever label you want to give it,
his name is Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, which means the one who pierces through reality and creates existence as he wishes to express himself. That's what it means in Hebrew.
Okay, and there's another label. The unnameable one is another label for this.
Exactly, which is, in other words, if he wishes to be a mountain or a supernova or a star or a planet or a holy bush, there it is.
Well, if one has complete faith in that entity that they are, there's no worry about any calamity, any virus, any planet exit, any tsunami, because their being will be centered enough so that it'll bring forth whatever it needs to deal with whatever comes up.
Well, exactly, which is, in other words, a calm spiritual awareness and total understanding without fear will always bring solutions.
So that's the first line, the first and really the only needed line of defense. Although, at a certain point, if you're shown by this being certain aspects of what is up and coming, you may take physical preparation as part of the signs and the knowingness that is being given to you.
Right.
So, you know, reading this book of mine to see what is likely to come up within, you know, a year to 10 years is something that may be a part of that. And it may not, depending on who you are and what you're being guided to do.
Well, it's also forcing people to kind of start moving along spiritually along the growth line. It also is separating the sheep and goats, literally, like the Bible says, because that's ultimately what's going to happen. It's the ones who Shema, who tries to hear the voice of the Creator God and then do his will that are going to make it. And again,
well, what if you woke up tomorrow and you didn't have electricity and all the stores were looted and shut down? What would you do? How could you see yourself surviving? Now, most people, they could not foresee that. But people of great faith, it would be almost an afterthought or a joke. You know, God has always provided and will continue.
Right.
No matter how it works out.
Well,
they'll know.
What I think was going to happen, and this is where I think this is a real key issue that you want to call it. When I have my show, Clay and Iron, I talk specifically about the technical scientific issues because I want to appeal to what I call the two witnesses, your intellect, and I want to appeal to people's spirits. And I want them to also test the science and test the spirit. But the key issue here is that you're right. That the God of the universe is going to put people in a position that if they don't walk by faith, they're not going to make it. I had one person back in 1999 when we talked about all the coming calamities, and he says, well, I have a berm shelter that can take, you know, a nuclear hit. I've got 50 caliber guns. And I'm thinking, you know what, guy? And I said to him, I said, you know, you have to realize that you need to do some serious spiritual centering and prayer. And if your spirit tells you, you better run away from that stuff and go in a particular direction, you better go where your spirit's taking you.
Exactly.
Or you're going to die. And you're not going to just die spiritually. You're going to die physically.
Well, it would only be a physical death. The awareness will always continue.
Yeah, but what if that whole process even of dying and suffering because of not listening, not shamaying in a sense, is a process of becoming spiritually mature?
To get out of this realm, you may have to die several thousand times before you finally figure out the way out.
Right. Well, the real issue, I think, is that the entrance into the next age, the age of what I call spirit over science, and this age is the age of hegemony and science over spirit. This age
hegemony. What would that be?
The issue of control, the matrix. I call it the dark age. This is the end of the dark age coming. And
it's
actually characterized in the interesting prophecy of Daniel, where he not only had to interpret the prophecy, he had to tell what the dream was before you interpreted it from King Nebuchadnezzar. And the issue was that this is the last secular empire, secularis. If you look at the Novus Ordo Secularis, which is in Latin, on the dollar bill, which is an Illuminati Masonic thing, where the cute humans or serpent men have ruled the earth ever since its latest inception, the last 6 to 10,000 plus years, we're really dealing with an issue that's going to be done away with. And the only ones entering this next stage are those who serve the living God, who hear and do. And that process is going to be a little painful because there are going to be many people who won't listen. They're not preparing for the avian flu. They're not preparing for nukes in U.S. cities. They're not preparing. They even believe that George Bush is a good Christian man.
So the Bush and Clinton crime families are having their last hurrah now and
right,
not in the aftertime.
Yeah, I like the quote in the Bible that says, woe to you, earth, and you sea, for the devil has come down to you, and great is his wrath, because he knows his time is short. His lease is soon over. And, you know, you have to have compassion for your fellow man, because the whole process is to test whether we have the capacity for compassion.
Well, it seems that these families I just spoke of are key. They're playing out the role perfectly to help awaken the people that need to be awakened.
Absolutely. Yeah, the mystery of iniquity, as they call it. The revelation of the sons of the living God, the understanding of that we are transitioning to become a galactic and a cosmic man, instead of an earthbound man that is hell-bent on destroying himself, his environment, at any cost.
Well, I think that we're simply going to recognize that we all already were a galactic or a corporate
exactly.
man.
Exactly. It's a realization of what we are, which is being hidden from us. In fact,
we're hiding it from ourselves, either way.
We're hiding it from ourselves, or we're allowing these above-government agencies, for example, most of the trillions of dollars, much of it was poured in by not only the modern secret agencies, but ancient schools of mysteries that have known about things like scalar, sacred geometry, alchemy, all kinds of scientific and mind control technologies that go back many thousands of years that are much more sophisticated than people realize. And only about 4% of science is actually public up to the PhD level.
I'm curious. We've we've hit on a lot of esoteric subjects, science and spiritual and religious. Is your audience up to speed on a lot of these subjects?
Yes, they are, and that's why we have this kind of show, because we're trying to stimulate people, whether they come from a Christian point of view, Jewish or Buddhist or whatever, that they need to flush the things that are what I call Babylon or confusion and come out of Babylon. They need to start taking personal responsibility, not expect an external Messiah before the Messiah rises in their own hearts. They need to also start waking up and realizing that if they want to survive, and again, maybe they don't. You know, I've seen people literally come into my office as a medical doctor for years and give me their death wish that for sure they had cancer, and of course eventually they would come in and we would, lo and behold, they would have a full crop of cancer or heart disease or whatever else. So as the man speaketh or woman speaketh, so shall it be. You know, that's the way it is. And I don't necessarily think it's bad, it's just what it is.
Right.
And the important thing is we want people to make choices, like Moses said before he put the people on Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal, the Mount of Blessings and Cursings. Today, this day, choose life. And the God of the universe is not one who is not a gentleman. He actually, or she, if you want to call it, the creative, knowing, all-knowing one, basically says, choose life if that's what you want. Choose death if that's what you want. And
all is allowed.
Yeah, exactly. And what I want people to do is take responsibility and stop acting to blame other people. It's very disturbing to me, whether it's intellectual or otherwise, which is why we have such a level of corruption in everything from medicine to politics to science to everything.
Well, you know, on the scale of consciousness, blame stands about 30 on the scale.
Yeah.
Extremely low. So once you start listening to someone blame this or blame that, you're not empowering anyone.
Exactly.
And you're disempowering yourself by doing so.
What I tell people is that whether I've given someone a diagnosis of cancer or whatever, there's always hope if you take control of the situation. And to give you a good example, one of the comments that was often made by Jesus when he was healing is he would say, you know, your faith has healed you. He didn't even say he did it. In fact, he made it a point to say when he was literally in his resurrected resurrected body, he says, and when I return, you shall be as me. He didn't say I was going to be great God and you're just going to be this little bug. He said you're going to be the same. That's a pretty big statement. What he's meaning there is take responsibility, be sons and daughters of the living God, and stop complaining and stop blaming George Bush or anybody else. If we just decide to start preparing for things like the Bureau of Climate Change and the destruction of the ecosystems and the consequences of, you know, another wacko nuclear war and other things, we can have a pretty peaceful time here, if that's what we choose. Now, if we want a non-peaceful time, decide to do nothing and think that levels of consciousness or issues like depleted uranium don't really count and the avian flu doesn't count and the financial catastrophe caused by another nuclear war in the Middle East doesn't really matter, well, then you have chosen. And as I always say, the sword of judgment is always yielded by the arm of mercy. You know, nothing is without total justification. Either mercy or judgment. And what I want people to do is exactly what Moses did, is stand in between the two mountains and say, now, grow up and take responsibility and stop looking for an externalized Messiah. If he comes, he'll only come after you smarten up and you have the Messiah in you.
Yeah.
And it's the same reason why I can shove technical information, and I say it's not an info war. There's tons of information. We swim in a sea of information, but we have people getting lower and lower levels of consciousness. They watch The Idiot Box. They watch mind-bending movies. They read books and drivel and articles by people who have very low levels of intention and consciousness, and so they drag themselves down to the point where they're barely conscious of their own existence. And there's consequences, physical consequences, financial, health, and corporate consequences as people on Earth. And if we want destruction, well, we're certainly going to receive it. Just like we allow the non-federal, non-reserve to drive our country into debt through our eyeballs, and we wonder why when we permit a president who's not being impeached who's about to start a nuclear war. You know?
Well, I hope that that doesn't happen. And I have some faith, at least, that we're being protected in some way against that kind of thing from happening.
Well, I think, actually, that we also have what I call brothers, if you want to refer to them as the angels. I believe God himself says in the book of Mark that unless those days were cut short, no flesh would survive, which is what he's doing, is he's promising an intervention. Because we're not alone in the galaxy or the universe, and certainly we're not doing too good. So far, our advance as a civilization is dependent on our spiritual walk, and it's not, as a corporate being, doing very well at all.
Yeah, I think some of our technology has gone a little past what we should be given at the level of maturity that we're at.
Right, and part of that reason why we have these technologies is ridiculously evil treaties made with those who have broken off from the galactic empires and have passed technologies to human beings through treaties that are pretty malevolent. And we have technologies we have no business having at our level of spiritual maturity. You know, I heard a comment made recently at Texas A&M that they are doing experiments with matter and antimatter, and some of their physicists have done calculations that they don't really know if their super collider, who is trying to create antimatter explosions, could actually stop if a chain reaction happens and might consume the entire solar system and turn it into a black hole. Now, I don't know how these guys get up and have their breakfast cereal, but to me, that really doesn't seem to be very much higher level of consciousness than a very self-destructive rock.
Well, that's what they thought of when they were creating the first nuclear bomb. They didn't know.
Exactly, and I'm wondering what kinds of spiritual insanity and devilishness is going on in the minds of these people when they make genetically modified frankenfoods or make miniguns that can shoot 4,000 rounds a minute and spray the earth with depleted uranium nanoparticles that are called DNA landmines. And I want to shake people up by shows like this to bring in people like yourself. I call you you are a spiritual surgeon, is what you are. You're going in there, Mark, not necessarily as a scientist, but as a person who asks a hell of a lot of really good questions. And then with your second book, which people need to get, you're waking people up and saying, you know, all of this stuff's really bad, but that's not even the issue. The real issue is, are you going to wake up spiritually? Because whether you want to survive this or not is all dependent on you. And it's not dependent on how much stuff you get, but whether or not you grow up spiritually and start to be able to, quote, I call it in Hebrew, Shema, hear and do. Hear the living God in prayer and decide not only personally but corporately whether you're going to respond appropriately.
And the message is just as good for the powers that be that are controlling the trillions of dollars that they have as it is for the man on the street that's just barely getting by. Because
which is why it says in the Bible that all of God's power is released in forgiveness. And forgiveness does several interesting things. Number one, it turns back negative intention on itself. And number two, it squeezes out the last drop of mercy so the judgment can fall. And judgment is a very simple and cleansing process that's incorporated right into the very matter and structures and laws of the universe, which is probably why things like binary and trinary star systems and periodic movement of hypergravitational objects like dwarf stars through the system as a Nibiru-type Death Star, Wormwood, whatever you want to call it in the Bible, in ancient texts, is probably a natural process to reset the button to make sure that people kind of get it.
Well, if there's really perfection in the universe and it's not all chaos, then
this is part of that perfecting process.
Right, exactly. So all this so-called madness that is happening is helping wake the few up that are borderline and get them to increase their consciousness and
right.
Realize who they are in this world. And so it's needed.
All the
madness is needed. It's part of the perfection. It's part of this perfect play.
Well, it's part of the process.
Right.
It's like the polar bear who has a very large glacier that he's floating on, or, you know, iceberg out in the ocean. And the glacier is, let's say, 12 miles by 12 miles. He might as well be up north, and he's not so bad because the ice keeps him nice and cold, but it floats all the way down to Africa. Now, by the time that he's got one paw on the ice, the iceberg, and he has to stand on one paw, you know, and balance himself, he has a problem. And we're soon going to be in that position where we're no longer going to have any comfort zone to make us stay in a spiritual state of stupidity and inaction and not facing the reality of our spiritual dilemma, which is the ultimate reason why people aren't preparing either for an avian flu, a geopolitical and financial crash, an impending nuclear war, or anything. And people are kind of inundated with just I call the toils of regular daily care of, you know, paying the mortgage and the gas bills and the other things, and they're never really conscious until they reach, as one of my patients said some years ago, when she finally got a diagnosis that she had cancer, she said she came in the next week and she had the brightest smile, and you could almost see her aura shining around her like this woman who was just transformed. And she wasn't cured. She just had reached the point where every day was a gift from God, and she was totally happy because she realized nothing that she could do could make things any different. And
that's what was needed for her.
Yeah, and in a sense, the cancer was an answer to bring her to that spiritual point where she had to face these things.
So many of these problems that we have on this planet could be viewed as a cancer.
Yeah, well, they also
that
will.
That could be waking a lot of people up.
Well, we're going to have the waking up process happen corporately in huge waves because, you know, just to deal with a few, and I'm a reality person. I think a true optimist, and I am one, is one who brutally accepts the beauty and the ugliness of reality but has a way to respond to it positively, not only for yourself but for others, because the only way for us to be happy is to serve others, and to serve others ultimately to the point of our own death and our own annihilation. And if we don't have that will and viewpoint, we can't even truly truly experience happiness or self-actualization. And once we reach that, and what we're going to be forced to do here shortly, because by and large, in, say, America and the Western nations, they think it's a party that's going to go on forever. And it's a very insane...
We got to wind her down?
Yep.
Thanks.
So I really appreciate you coming on the program tonight. And Mark, and what would you say is a kind of a final statement to everybody listening? And, of course, your book is Delicate Earth by Mark Hazelwood. And how can they get that?
Well, the only way they're going to get it is they go order it off the website, planetxinbound.com.
Planetxinbound.com.
Yeah,
what
the powers that be have shut down my colleague, Professor McKenney's books. They won't allow them in the major bookstores.
Well, isn't that disturbing? You know what? You know that if you're stirring people up that they won't allow them in the major bookstores, that it's either a special ops program or something else, because if you truly had just even some good questions, like, you know, over the 9/11 issues like Marty Sheen had, then you know that you must be hitting a few nerves that NASA and the above government agencies don't want to know while they're feverishly building underground cities.
Well, they're fully aware of the situation, and they have a huge campaign to cover it up.
Yeah,
and they're hoping that their solution with the underground cities are going to help them.
Yeah, I think what it's going to do is make very fancy tombs.
Yeah.
This is the Bible. He said, you know, that they shall hide themselves in the rocks and the caves and the deep places of the earth from the face of the one who is the, you know, talks about the one who judges the quick and the dead. And that's coming. And so I appreciate you coming on the program. And again, I think your mentor many years ago was correct when he told you that you were a surgeon, because you weren't one with a scalpel, but with a spiritual scalpel to make people wake up.
And yeah, I have to do it with the buffers on, the spiritual buffers.
If you can get Dr. McKenney to call me, I'd love to have him on the programs as well with yourself, and perhaps we'll do a two-hour special on a Monday.
Okay.
Because this is an important issue, and again, as we start tying things together, called connecting the dots, I want people to connect the science, the geopolitics, the health, and the spirituality. When they do, they start to get patterns, and the patterns will release them. And then they can just simply make the decision. I don't tell people what to believe. I want them to challenge this. I always say, don't believe what I say. Go check it out. And then take some action if you desire it.
Yeah,
so thanks for being
guided to. And that will become obvious to them.
Oh, exactly. You don't need to tell people what to do. They'll just do it because it's the right thing to do, if they want
right.
to do it.
Right.
So thank you very much, Mark, for being on the program.
Thank you for having me on, and I'll give McKenney a call.
I appreciate it. And everyone, take care and take action. There are no silent heroes, and seek the truth, and the truth will set you free. And thank you, everyone, at BBS Radio, Don and Doug, and all of the wonderful people that that check out not only my new site, which will be up in a few weeks, clayandiron.com, that's clayandiron.com, but my other website, NutriMedical, NutriMedical.com. We have many amazing guests, and we challenge you to think and to find the truth. Take care, and we'll be back on Monday.
Thank you again, Bill.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.